Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Fall is all about cozy comforts, and with Hero Bread, you can enjoy all your favorites and still hit your health goals. From breakfast bagels and meal-prepped enchiladas to mouth-watering burgers and cheesy noodles, you won't believe Hero Bread's options have 0 to 5 grams net carbs and are high fiber from the taste and texture. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at HERO.CO. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains 2 to 18 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on hero.co for more information.
Can you believe it? It's football. I've been watching it for 40 years.
Are you kidding me?
You're listening to Winning Cures Everything.
Game day, baby. Wake up or get out.
Here's your host.
A confident young man. A superb athlete.
Gary Seegers.
All right, welcome to it. It's Winning Cures Everything. It's a college football podcast. I am your host, Gary Seegers, and it has been a minute. Currently, I am road tripping for a little bit, a little solo drive down to the coast. So I decided, why not? Why not hop back on here? It's only been, I don't know, 6 weeks, 5 weeks. It's been over a month since the last time that I hopped in with the YouTube and with a podcast, etc. I have been working on previews. We will be getting those posted. It will be a fun time this summer, I'm telling you. Again, if you are joining in for the first time, which I don't know how that's possible, but it is everybody's first show at some point, I am not doing the BetUS TV college football show this season. I have a new job. I have new things that I'm doing. It was just not going to work. So, scheduling and whatnot, it was a fun 4 seasons that I did that, but I will continue with Winning Cures Everything, so I'm going to continue on with that. So, we'll have this here, we'll be doing it. Either way, it's going to be a good season, going to be a good summer, and hopefully you will join along for the ride, and hit that subscribe button, all that fun stuff. So, and I will stop telling you this as we go forward, because like, again, if I'm only doing shows every, like, 5 or 6 weeks over the summer, then I feel like I need to let you know exactly what to expect when the football season gets here, because that's when the majority of people do, in fact, get here. There have been several topics to discuss in the world of college football. And so, for example, for today, we're going to be hitting on the CFP format disputes, right? Everybody had been talking about... I mean, we're at 12 right now, but the college football playoff was going to move to potentially 14 or 16, and it really just skipped by 14 because now everybody's looking at 16, but it was going to be a 4-4-2-2-1-3 format. So 4 automatic qualifiers for the SEC and the Big Ten, 2 automatic qualifiers for the Big 12 and the ACC, 1 for the G5, and then 3 at-large bids. So that would be a spot for Notre Dame, and then 2 other at-large candidates. Both could come from the SEC. Both could come from the Big Ten. One could come from either of those conferences. You could get a Big 12 team that scoots in. There's no telling. There's really no telling how that would work. But with SEC spring meetings and all of that stuff that happened back in May, we started to hear about a 5 plus 12, which is the 5 conference champions and 11 at-large bids, and it's just the best of the best get in, and that's it. Which is not at all what the Big Ten thought was going on. Regardless, we're going to hit on that. We are going to hit on the House settlement a little bit. We're going to talk about Pac-12 media rights. It was announced who they are going to go to. Heisman contenders? I'll riff on that for a little bit. We'll see. I was going to do schedule spots. I'm not ready for that one yet. And a little news about Charlotte football. Very rarely do we talk about Charlotte. I will be previewing them once we get to the AAC. But We're not ready for that yet. That will be later in July. First, let me go ahead and tell you, if you have not subscribed, go ahead and do that. You can hit the subscribe button on YouTube. That would be very, very helpful. And you can also do that on the podcast, because I will be making sure that we are doing podcasts this year. I'm going to be releasing a lot of stuff on bettingcfb.com. It's $5 a month, $50 for the year. I have not put very much stuff on there over the summer while my situation has changed. So hopefully you will join us over there. And every little bit that comes in there helps out with getting this show rolling. All the gear, all the time, all the everything that it takes to be able to do this. Hopefully you guys understand how that works. So let's start off with topic number one on this. CFP format disputes, the college football playoff. Now, again, I explained a little bit of this before. Quick refresher, we're at 12 right now. There was talk about moving up to 14 teams, and then we just skipped right past that, and there's talk about moving to 16 teams in 2026. The 2025 season is the supposed last year that we are going to have 12 teams in the college football playoff. And the way that that is structured currently is the top four seeds get a bye. Number five plays number 12. Number six plays it, da, 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 da. The only change that has come to that is it is no longer conference champs that get the byes. So now if Notre Dame were to be ranked number one in the CFP, they would have a bye, even without a conference championship game. So we are going strict seeding 1 through 12, and the top four seeds get a bye. That's the way that it is for the 2025 football season. 2026, they have set a deadline of we got to have this done by December 1st. The reasoning behind that is you have to let your TV partners know what is happening. And your TV partner is ESPN and now TNT Sports, because TNT Sports bought two of the games and potentially more, because ESPN doesn't exactly know where they're going to house all of these games, right? So the two formats that are being discussed, as I mentioned, SEC spring meetings came, and all of a sudden, this talk of the 4-4-2-2-1-3 16-team format that we had shifted to 5 plus 11, which is 5 conference champs, 11 at-larges, and it's really just the best teams get in no matter what. We're not going to have 4 Big Ten teams in if only 3 of them are playoff-worthy. We could have 7 SEC teams in this thing. I mean, there's no telling. It could be anything. But the best teams will get into the playoff. And this is not at all what the Big Ten expected. The Big Ten was setting up that 4-4-2-2-1-3 format so that they could do basically a championship weekend. Tony Petitti is the Big Ten commissioner. He came from Major League Baseball. The wild card spot in the playoff, there used to only be 8 teams that would make the playoffs in baseball. You had your 3 division winners on each side, and then 1 wild card from each side. And that was it. But then they decided, okay, well, what if we just had like a wild card play-in game? And we could probably sell that for several million dollars or whatever it is. And it has taken off like wildfire. Everybody loves the wild card play-in game. So now there's more to play for at the end of the season. And it makes a lot more sense. I say makes a lot more sense. How's this? It's another high-stakes game. It's more inventory that they can sell. It keeps more fans engaged for longer. It makes sense. So with the Big Ten, Tony Petitti looked at it as, if we've got 4 guaranteed spots and it's all based on conference scheduling or conference records, which is based on conference scheduling, we could then sell a package of SEC and Big Ten games during the regular season, because those could be our non-conference games, so we can sell that and make more money. And the championship weekend, it wouldn't just be a Big Ten championship game, which last year was Oregon and Penn State, so that was a good game. The year before that was Michigan and Iowa, I guess it was, which was not a good game because Iowa never had a chance to score in the game. What was it, 23-0, I think, was the final in that one? Or 30-0? I mean, I don't even remember because nobody cared. Like, yeah, there were viewers for it, but it wasn't exactly a highly viewed game. The only reason that there were viewers is because there was no other games on in the time slot. I take that back. There was an ACC championship game on, and that one was putrid too. But if there are more games, you can sell those for more money to your TV partners. And the Big Ten has three of those, right? Fox, CBS, NBC. And, of course, the Big Ten Network as well, but championship weekend, games that all have stakes. All of your TV partners could have games that have stakes on the same weekend, and you're not having to... you'll still trade out the Big Ten championship game. Last year it was CBS. This coming season it's going to be Fox. NBC is going to be in there at some point. You get the idea. But if there were going to be automatic qualifiers where they are going to get into the playoff and whoever wins this game is getting into the playoff, basically you are expanding the playoff pool by doing this. It's the same thing that they do with NCAA basketball. Whoever wins the conference tournaments gets into the NCAA tournament. It's not based on regular season. It's based on this. And the way that you set yourself up to get in this and have the easiest path is to win more games during the regular season. That's the way it works. So, the Big Ten wanted the automatic qualifier format. The SEC said, okay, we're kind of on board with this. Greg Sankey, of course, the commissioner of the SEC, he was on board with it. What we found out is that the SEC coaches and some of the ADs were maybe not so much on board with it. And part of this is because they just wanted the best teams. And they don't really want to go to 9 SEC conference games, which is what you would have to do this non-conference deal with the Big Ten, etc., right? Big Ten already plays 9 conference games. The SEC plays 8. The problem is that in the SEC, the teams are tougher, right? There's only 16 SEC teams. In the Big Ten, there are 18 teams. And if you look at recruiting rankings, and that's the biggest thing to go by, and also look at transfer portal rankings as well, those all kind of tie in with recruiting. The SEC routinely has 12 of the top 25. I mean, it is nonstop. The ones that are routinely left out, Mississippi State, probably Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, I guess Kentucky. And those are the other 13 are consistently vying for top 25 spots when it comes to talent. And that's incredibly difficult. The Big Ten does not have anything like that. They've got some, but they're not taking up 60% of the top 25. So it is a little more difficult. And yes, when you move to 9 conference games, what that does is give you, it gives half of the teams in your league an additional loss. Not ideal when it comes to getting into the playoff and whatnot. But if you do have automatic qualifiers, then it is what it is. So it all really is going to come down to scheduling, right? The SEC said, we'll stay at 8, and we'll just do 5 plus 11. And the Big Ten said, that still puts us at a disadvantage because half of our teams are going to have an additional loss. So you could get more, et cetera. So if you're going to do 5 plus 11, we want you to move to 9 conference games. And the SEC says, well, if we move to 9 conference games, then we want to do AQ, but that's not going to look good to all these other conferences. The Big 12 is who snuck in there from everything that I've heard. But Brett Yormark and Greg Sankey have a good relationship. Brett Yormark is the Big 12 commissioner. And he came in and started talking about the 5 plus 11. Now, casual fans would look at this and say, the Big 12 was only going to get one team in last year anyway. Why would you not take the two? Why would you not take two automatic qualifiers? And the reasoning behind that is, in some years, they could have 3 to 4 teams in this thing. Because it's all cyclical. Now, more than likely, with the way that this goes, the SEC and the Big Ten are going to take up the majority of the at-large spots. But there are years where you could have multiple teams, 3 to 4 Big 12 teams that are all worthy of being in the playoff. And if that's the case, you do not have to admit that you are lesser than the SEC and the Big Ten. We all know the truth, but you don't have to put it on a piece of paper. You don't have to... If you are in the NBA and you give the West 8 playoff teams, but you only give the East 6, it kind of lets you know that the power in the NBA is in the West. Now, everybody knows that the West is stronger than the East. But if you keep it equal, at least on paper, at least with everybody having the same ability to get in, then you just see what happens from there. So I understand where we're going with this. I think when it comes down to it, I think that we are going to get the 4 plus 4 plus 2 plus 2 plus 1 plus 3, because you do still have those three at-larges, the three wild cards, if you will, and you're going to get the SEC and the Big Ten selling more inventory to TV partners. That's what I think. Because when it comes to the SEC moving to 9 conference games, Greg Sankey has wanted them to move to 9 conference games because it makes the scheduling format so much easier. You don't have to get rid of any rivalry games, etc. Because it's very simple. You keep 2 every year rivalry games. Everybody gets 2. So like Texas is always going to get to play Oklahoma and Texas A&M. Alabama will always get to play Tennessee and Auburn. Georgia will always get to play Auburn and Florida, or whatever. Whatever it might be, right? Everybody gets 2. And then you play 7 other teams. If there's only 16 SEC teams, you rotate them. So it's you got 9 games. 7 of them are against everybody else every 2 years. So in 4 seasons, really in 3 seasons, every player that comes in, because they can't leave for the NFL before 3 seasons. But in, how about this? Every player that plays 4 years at an SEC school will have played in every other SEC stadium. And that's cool. I think that's a good thing. Because there were some different games that did not happen except for every 12 years, I think it was. I mean, it's just bananas. Texas A&M and Georgia, like, never played. It was just, why did we not ever get that game? Like, it makes no sense. Makes no sense. So, with this, it's very easy. Everybody plays everybody every 4 years, and they do home and away, and it is what it is. But the part of this is, and the Big Ten has dealt with this, and the ACC is dealing with this. Big 12 is dealing with this. Some years you're going to have 4 home games and 5 road games. Some years you're going to have 5 home games and 4 road games. You got to find a way to make the home schedule balance out. So we'll see exactly what they do with that. I think we're going to do the 4-4-2-2-1-3. But if we move to 5-11, maybe that's because maybe somebody got in the ear of the Big Ten and told them, hey, fans don't like this. They don't want it to be an invitational. They don't, you know, whatever it might be. But if you pay attention, in every other professional sport, which is exactly what college football has become, there's a set number that comes from one side and the other. So with the SEC and the Big Ten, but at that point you're telling some conferences that they are not as good as other conferences, and nobody wants to believe that. So even though you still get bites at the apple, you still get opportunities, you're just not going to have as many, and it doesn't change year after year. So 5 plus 11 makes more sense, at least on paper, because it's easy to explain. 4 plus 4 plus 2 plus 2 plus 1 plus 3 would bring in more money in the short term. I don't know about long term, because I don't know what it does for the popularity of the sport. But right now, there's still ratings, still things are working, so we'll see what happens. Let's move on to the next topic. And I've already gone for almost 20 minutes on one topic. I mean, that is just absurd. By the way, the amount of money that the SEC would get from ESPN is somewhere between $50 and $80 million, potentially. I think it could be more than that. But let's just say that, let's go on the higher end. Let's say it's $80 million. That would be $5 million to each school in the SEC over, oh, it'd be every season through the length of the contract. So an additional $80 million to play an additional SEC game on your conference schedule. This house money's got to come from somewhere, which is what we're about to talk about. So yeah, if they move to 9 conference games, I think we're going to go AQ. Topic number 2. Oh, by the way, thank you guys for watching and for listening and all that good stuff. If you haven't already, hit that like button if you're on YouTube. And if you would so kindly hit the subscribe button, tell your friends about the show. You guys know how this stuff goes, but I do appreciate it. It's a one-man operation here. I don't know if you guys knew that. Some of you that have watched for a long time, you know this.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou. forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
The house settlement. So, some people have not paid attention to this. Some people don't know what in the hell all this is, so I'm going to give you a bit of a refresher, because today, when I'm recording this, PayPal teamed up with the Big Ten and the Big 12 to be the official payment method for for revenue sharing for student-athletes, which I think is hilarious. But hey, you know, both of these conferences are going to get money from PayPal for this. And if you're paying everybody the same way, it's easy to keep up with in one spot. Everybody gets paid at a certain thing. You can automatically take out taxes. It's a whole thing. It's a whole thing. So that definitely would help. But the house settlement, let's go through. Let's do a brief refresher. And I'll say brief. Hopefully I don't ramble on this one. Grant House. For those that don't know what happened, because this sounds like it's college basketball and college football, right? Revenue sharing for student athletes. The way that this sport was set up, or the way that college athletics was set up for a long, long time, is these players worked and played these games in front of, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of people on TV, in front of millions of people. They've got these humongous TV contracts. The universities would take all of this money, and they would pay coaches, and they would build these big buildings, and the student athletes would get scholarships. And that's putting it mildly, obviously, because student athletes would also, they would get some of the best food on campus. And they would get premier spots to be able to live. And they would get, you know, and there was also things going on under the table. You get money from a bag man, all that kind of stuff. But bag man money is not corporate money. And with NIL, you are getting corporate money. This is real money. You don't have to hide it. I think that's the easiest way to put it. And with the Bagman stuff, it was, you know, the Jeremy Pruitt thing went viral for a long time because they were handing out cash in McDonald's bags. At least that was one of the stories that was put in front of the NCAA. But regardless, Grant House was a former Arizona State swimmer, and he sued the NCAA, and there were several other lawsuits that were going on at the time, but they were suing to be able to use their name, image, and likeness. There was a guy way back when, I think he played for Colorado. He was a skier, maybe, or a, I forget what it was, Jeremy Blunt, I think. This is the guy's name. Anyway, but he was, for all intents and purposes, he was an Olympic skier, and to pay for all of his Olympic stuff, his training, etc., he had endorsements. And those endorsements led the NCAA to basically tell him that he was not eligible to play college football, because you cannot be a professional athlete, which would mean that you are accepting money for this stuff, but you can't be a professional athlete and play an amateur game. It was ridiculous. It always has been, always will be. That changed in 2021. This lawsuit was brought about well before 2021. But it's been in the courts for forever. Basically, let's go through exactly what this is. The college athletes, they sued the NCAA in a lawsuit that was called House versus NCAA. Basically said they were unfairly blocked from name, image, likeness, earning rights. They settled this case for $2.8 billion in back damages that would pay student athletes that played from 2016 through 2024. And we're talking about 350 NCAA institutions, so you're looking at about 200,000 athletes per year. Pretty big number. So we're talking $2.8 billion, so everybody's gonna get $1,000, a couple thousand dollars, whatever it is. Like, I hadn't done the math, but you get the point. But it's a civil lawsuit, right? That's the way it goes. Civil suit, everybody makes a little bit of money, or a class action lawsuit, basically, where, hey, we were all damaged by this one company, everybody gets a payment of $5.44. Where do you want us to send the check? And that's basically what this is. Like, yeah, we know you could have made a lot of money, but, like, we can't pay you that. So, like, here's what we can afford to do. Now, if this had gone to trial, it would have been an absolute disaster for the NCAA. They would have been bankrupt. It would have been awful. Absolutely awful. But luckily, did not go to trial. Everybody settled. $2.8 billion. Now, student-athletes have the right to name, image, likeness, and not only that, the schools now have the right to pay the players some of the revenue share. So, all D1 schools now can pay up to $20.5 million, and that's all of them, can pay $20.5 million to their student athletes per season. And it's all the student athletes. Football, basketball, volleyball, softball, baseball, bowling, like whatever it is. You can get paid for that now. The issue that you run into, not all of these student athletes are worth NIL payments, name, image, likeness. Football players and basketball players are worth immensely more than players that, you know, shoot for the rifle team. Rifle is not a revenue sport. People don't pay for tickets to go and watch the rifle team. But everybody deserves a little bit of something. And some sports are prioritized more at different institutions than others. For example, at Kentucky, basketball is more important than football. At West Virginia Rifle is more important on that campus than it would be at Ole Miss. If West Virginia wants to continue winning national championships in rifle, they're probably going to have to pay some of the best rifle competition in the country. Texas Tech women's softball made the championship series of the Women's College World Series. Now, they lost against Texas, but the reason they were there is a pitcher that was given $1 million to play for Texas Tech. It's a lot of money for a women's softball team, but you could prioritize which sports you wanted to put money into. Texas Tech softball had never been in that position, so they paid probably the best player in women's softball $1 million to come to Lubbock. Now, she played at Stanford before that, gave up a Stanford degree to go and play softball in Lubbock, but she made $1 million. So it is what it is. Like, everybody can prioritize what they want to. The issue that you're going to run into with the House settlement, one, I do find it funny that the guy that the suit is named after, Grant House, was a swimmer, and there's a chance that some of these schools could do away with these Olympic sports because they want all of the money that comes in to go towards very specific things, right? Why would we fund a swim team? Why would we fund, like, we can let all of these things go on as club teams without spending the athletic budget to compete nationally. If you're a club team, you play colleges around you, regionally, all that kind of stuff, and it doesn't have to have the same kind of funding that major Division I athletics would need. So I do think that House could end up eventually. A lot of the ADs are saying the right stuff right now. We're not doing away with these sports, and it's important to the fabric of this university, and blah, 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 blah. We all understand that money talks. Like, we all get it. So, yeah, a lot of these are going to go by the wayside. A lot of these non-revenue sports. If you cannot make the money back, if there is no return on investment, a lot of them will go away. Some of them are more important to some schools than others. So there are some that will stay. But either way, the Deloitte Clearinghouse is the big issue with this. So the NIL deals, there are obviously going to be rules with this. You can pay up to $20.5 million. There can be outside NIL agreements between corporations and student athletes, but any deal that is over $600 has to be put through a clearinghouse that is run by Deloitte. And basically, they can say, all right, well, Jacob Toppin went back to Texas Tech this year for $4 million to play basketball. Such and such company is going to pay him $4 million for some autograph sessions, and he's going to be in a commercial and da-da-da-da-da. Well, Patrick Mahomes doesn't get, you know, $4 million to do commercials and some signings. So Deloitte could come back and say, that's not market value. That's ridiculous. no, Texas Tech can't pay it, that such and such booster cannot pay such and such player $4 million for da 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 da. Now, when it comes to market value and things like that, we will get to a point where these boosters and whatnot are not going to give that much money, because a lot of times they were giving players that much money to pick a school and or to stay at a school as opposed to going somewhere else. And what the NIL agreement with the school will do, I believe, is lock them into playing for that school for a certain amount of time. Because there have been all kinds of different things come out about part of the rules of this College Sports Commission, the CSC, which was created as another version of the NCAA that kind of oversees the money aspect of this, of student athletes getting paid and whatnot. Maybe I should just call them athletes instead of students now. But if you buy a player out from under another contract, you're going to have to pay that university back, and it will count against your 20.5, but that school gets 20.5 plus whatever was bought at. Like, there's a whole lot of mumbo jumbo that goes with it. The money gets weird. Some boosters are not going to continue to pay this outlandish money because the school is going to be paying some of this. There are some boosters that will. Tennessee, Texas Tech, those are the ones you're really going to have to pay attention to. BYU has gotten into it as well. There are several that will continue to do this. So we're going to have to keep an eye on those. But it is interesting to watch, because this House settlement has changed the way that the sport operates routinely. And I'm not certain what they're gonna try and do with it, or what it's really gonna look like. Because I do think the DeLowitt stuff is going to end up back in court. Because how can you say what is fair market value? Because new market values get set all the time. Like, for the longest time, you can't pay an NFL quarterback that much, because then it takes up 30-something percent of your salary cap and blah, 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 blah. Now, all of the NFL quarterbacks, because that is the most important position on the team, now all of the NFL quarterbacks are making an outrageous amount of money. That's the market value. So, it just depends on the team and the market and da-da-da-da. If you had somebody trying to tell NFL teams what they could spend on players, it would never work. So I do think that it's going to end up back in court, because I do think somebody somewhere is going to get punished for something like this, and it'll be a whole thing. So, yeah, we went another 15 minutes on the House settlement. Good Lord. Right, let's do this. Let's talk Pac-12 media rights, and then we'll call it a podcast. How's that? Again, like the video, subscribe, all that good stuff. It's getting kind of dark, so it might be time for me to hang up anyway. But little conference realignment, little Pac-12 media rights, etc. The Pac-12 earlier, and the new Pac-12 earlier this week, announced that they have solidified their television partner going into next season through the 2031 season. And that would be CBS Sports. So effectively, the new Pac-12, which is eight schools, but seven football schools right now. They need an additional school in order to be a viable conference in the eyes of the CFP and the NCAA and da-da-da-da. Gonzaga is a all-sports member, but they don't have a football team. So, but you've got Boise State, and you've got Fresno State and Colorado State, and the big schools out of the Mountain West have gone and joined Oregon State and Washington State. And they have been trying to find this additional football member and we're getting close to July. I mean, it's what is today? June. And I don't have the time. It's June something. June 26th, 25th, 20, whatever it is. So, which I'm probably going to put this out tomorrow, but we'll see. July 1st is when realignment news happens because that's end of the fiscal year. Like, da-da-da-da. So you have to let schools or conferences know that you're leaving by a certain point. I have been talking for a long time about how I thought it would be wise for the University of Memphis and maybe Tulane and one additional to join the Pac-12. Better games, potentially better media contract, better da-da-da-da-da, right? The issue is when this news came out, and this is why Memphis is not going to join, when this news came out, I believe the number was around $9 to $10 million per school per season. Now, there will be additional TV contracts as well. TNT, I believe, is going to get involved with this. So CBS is the main one. They're going to get the Pac-12 championship game, all that kind of stuff, right? So you're going to have three, I believe it's three major CBS games per season plus the Pac-12 championship game will air on big CBS, and then CBS Sports will get everything else. But there will be additional. So, like, the CW, I think, is going to be involved because they had Oregon State and Washington State last year. The CW wants more college games. They want live sports. And then also TNT needs sports. They got to justify how much they are costing cable companies and blah, 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 blah. You get the point. So there will be additional members. Don't know exactly how much we're talking about additional money-wise per school, but Memphis has always talked about wanting to join a Power Four league. That is their goal, etc. Memphis earned just over $11 million from the AAC through their media rights last season. With the Pac-12, you're looking at a little less or potentially about the same, except there would be more travel costs because Memphis would be the only school over on this side of the world. And it's the buyout to get out of the AAC is like $20 million. And while $20 million doesn't sound like a ton for like Alabama and Ohio State, and I mean even Kentucky, Mississippi, SEC and Big Ten teams could pay the $20 million like it's nothing. Not exactly the same with the American Athletic Conference, right? You can't just make up that money. So, Memphis will not be the next member of the Pac-12. So the way that it looks like it's going to shape out as far as conference realignment goes is we are going to get Texas State leaving the Sun Belt and going and joining the new Pac-12. Which would be good for the Pac-12 because then you've got a foothold in Texas. It's good for Texas State because this is certainly bigger than what they were doing in the Sun Belt. I think it's going to be good for all of those schools to be involved with that. So, but Texas State goes over to the Pac-12. That leaves an opening in the Sun Belt. The Sun Belt is going to get Louisiana Tech from CUSA. And then CUSA, who is already at 11 schools, they will stand firm at 10 schools because they are bringing in Delaware and Missouri State this year. So, we're staying at 136 FBS schools heading into the 2026 season. And I think I'm all right with that. Sounds like a pretty good idea to me. But conference realignment continues to churn. Next steps for Memphis, you wait until 2031 and you see if Florida State and Clemson are still unhappy with the ACC. Right now, the ACC has changed things around as far as revenue. And those schools will potentially make a lot more money based on TV ratings and if Florida State can get back to winning. And then they get some rewards for playoff appearances and winning conference titles, all that kind of stuff, right? Yeah, You see where things go. Like, if Stanford and Cal get tired of being shipped across the country all the time, maybe they go and join this new Pac-12. I don't think it's going to happen, but we'll see. And if that happens, then there could be openings in the ACC. Memphis could join the ACC. The only way that this would make any kind of sense for Memphis would be to move all of their other sports to the Big East and then move football only to the Pac-12. Even then, I don't know that that is going to work. And it'd be the same thing with Tulane and the same thing with South Florida, East Carolina, all of these other ones that are trying to move up. We'll see. We'll see how this works. All right. I had mentioned Heisman contenders. I had mentioned, what else did I mention earlier? Oh, Charlotte. I'll talk about this real quick. We're at 43 minutes on this so far. Charlotte football season tickets have sold out for the first time ever. And while that's a fantastic headline, right? The issue is that Jerry Richardson Stadium, the capacity is only 15,314 seats. And the season tickets are not all of the seats. So they probably sold 10,000, 11,000, 12,000 seats for this. The way that they were able to do this, one, Tim Albin comes in from Ohio. They just won their first MAC title since the 60s. He's an incredible college football coach. So they got a new coach that everybody believes in. They brought in a pretty good transfer portal class. People are ramped up about 49ers football, right? The other way that they were able to do this is North Carolina, the Tar Heels, with head coach Bill Belichick, are playing at Jerry Richardson Stadium in Charlotte this year. And the only way for you to buy tickets to go see North Carolina play in Charlotte was to buy season tickets. Genius marketing. Vanderbilt did this for years. The Tennessee game in Nashville, if you wanted to go see the Vols play, well, Vanderbilt season ticket package would be less than a game going to see the Vols in Knoxville. So if you already live in Nashville, it's very easy. There's a lot of Tar Heel fans that live in Charlotte that don't always make the drive to Chapel Hill. This makes sense. So, yeah, pay the couple hundred dollars, whatever it is, for season tickets to go see the Charlotte 49ers. Not every game is going to be a sellout, although on paper it might be. But this is smart marketing. And why North Carolina is playing there, I don't know. But there are some states that do this. And I think it's a good idea where the big state school goes to play at the smaller state school. In Alabama, that is not the case. The University of Alabama does not go and play. They don't bring Troy in. They don't bring South Alabama in. They don't bring UAB in. They don't, like, Jacksonville State, none of those. The University of Alabama does not play those schools. They don't play Alabama State. Should they? I think so. Yes. Auburn plays Alabama State and Alabama A&M. Don't remember the last time they played UAB or Troy or da-da-da-da, but regardless. I think it's a smart idea. Arkansas plays Arkansas State this year for the first time since, I want to say, the 80s, maybe? I mean, it's been a long, long time. But that's the way it works. So, yeah, I'm excited about this. I want to see what it looks like. Cheers to Charlotte for this. And cheers to you guys for watching the show. So I'm always excited when I get to do one of these. It's not all the time, but it will be more regular as we are heading into college football season. The schedule for next week, we're doing MAC teams first. Then we're going to preview the Big Ten. And then we're going to preview Conference USA. And then we're going to preview the SEC. And then we'll see where we go from there. But I am excited about it. So hopefully you guys are as well. Hit that subscribe button. Hit the like button. Share the show with all of your friends. And again, I appreciate you guys. Thank you for sticking with me. It's going to be a fun 2025 football season. With that said, take care of yourself. Take care of each other. God bless college football, and hopefully all of your tickets cash this week.
Thanks for listening to Winning Cures Everything. Make sure and subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast app, and make sure to leave a nice 5-star review. You can follow Gary on Twitter at GaryWCE, and the show is at Winning Cures. Be sure to check out the merch in our web store and share the show.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. LeafHome.com/water.